Welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly podcast, where we take a critical look at some topical developments with a leadership and management theme. I'm business and finance journalist Matt Packer, and in this podcast I'll be reviewing stories up to Friday the 15th of June. Joining me in this analysis is the Institute's Head of Research Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello there, Kate.
Hello, Matt.
All right, heading straight into the first item on our agenda, auto and engineering brand Rolls-Royce announced on the 14th of June that it will be culling 4,600 jobs over the next 2 years as part of a major restructuring drive, with middle management positions at the firm's Derby HQ set to bear the brunt of the losses. Derby South MP Margaret Beckett has warned that the company risks cutting jobs, quote, too deep and too fast, close quote. Now, from a management standpoint, could removing so many managers in just 2 years do more harm than good?
Defining the role of the middle manager is really difficult because it will vary, obviously, from organisation to organisation,
yeah,
but also from function to function.
Mm-hmm.
So what one might think is middle management in one place, one might consider not so middle or more senior or more junior in another. But whatever the consequence is, somebody's going to have to do a bit more, and there's going to be issues around responsibility and also perhaps a real understanding of the value that middle managers do add to organisations in a much maligned and often invisible way. So this is a good warning here. Be careful what you do, be careful of the possible consequences, and think before making whole-scale cuts, like 10% from every department, because some departments might really struggle.
Yeah, I mean, middle managers very often fulfil a role of being mandarins going between higher and lower levels of the organisation. So they're almost the glue that holds things together. Would you say that's true?
Yes, they produce papers that become recommendations that go up the organisation. Then they take on the instructions that they have to then transmit, disseminate and make happen downwards. So they have such an important role. And of course, if you're going to get rid of them, then you either have to empower your junior levels of management to make those decisions, make those recommendations, or keep them at their level of responsibility. And senior managers are going to have to take a much more hands-on and operational role.
So the message really is be very cautious about stuff like this.
And also do make sure that you look at the function in which this middle management is taking place.
Yeah. Okay, in our second item, Business Secretary Greg Clark has unveiled regulatory proposals that would require UK-listed companies to publish the pay ratios between their highest and lowest paid members of staff. In a statement, Clark said, quote, "Most of the UK's largest companies get their business practices right, but we understand the anger of workers and shareholders when bosses' pay is out of step with company performance," close quote. Now, the proposals have been endorsed by both the Investment Association and the High Pay Centre. What's your reaction to these measures?
A consequence of the publishing of the gender pay gap statistics is a call for more transparency. So we've started looking at things in terms of ratios. What percentage do women earn compared to men? And it was accessible and understandable.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got another thing that's really easy to understand. The chief exec earns 350 times more than the lowest paid member of the organisation. And then the onus is on the chief exec to say why he or she is worth 350 times more. And that's quite a difficult question to answer, and you have to be absolutely sure that the value you add to the organisation is reflected in the results that you deliver. And when you hear situations of people receiving huge bonuses when actually performance has either stayed the same or deteriorated, that has to be questioned. So this is a really good step on the journey to having a better understanding about reward.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that once the ratios have been published, that's almost lighting the blue touch paper. The next bit, which is more important, is to actually have the conversations about why the ratios are the way they are.
Yes, and really put the people on the spot to say, yes, I'm worth all this money because actually I have delivered value in excess of what I'm being paid.
Yep. OK, next up, we have a changing of the guard at the top of Starbucks. In an emotional online farewell letter to the company's staff, outgoing chairman Howard Schultz has given fulsome praise to his successor, CEO Kevin Johnson, describing him as, quote, a true servant leader, close quote. His characterisation of Johnson's management style has drawn renewed attention to the concept of servant leadership. Now, what do you understand this approach to mean, and how does it improve upon more traditional management styles?
Well, many people have many definitions of servant leadership, and a unifying theme, I suppose, is the idea of being servant to a higher purpose. Mm-hmm. And I was at an event earlier today where some young sixth formers from Birmingham were talking about what they understood leadership to be. And very quickly, they were talking about working for something that was more important than money.
Yeah.
And it's being a servant to an ideal, recognizing that you're adding value or your work has meaning. And that if you're all working towards the same goal, then of course you are all servants to that higher purpose. But I think on a more concrete and less abstract level, it's about saying to the people that you lead, how can I help you do your job the best you can? Because my job is to support you in being good. So if we go back to the middle managers, if that ethos operates in that organization,
yeah,
without those middle managers saying to their juniors, how can I help you be great?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the responsibility goes upwards, doesn't it? To the yeah. senior team saying, how can we serve you in delivering our collective purpose?
Yeah, so it's very much a case of the leader providing themselves as a resource for the staff rather than seeing their staff as a resource for them.
Yes, it's about helping people be the best they can be and actually accepting that you can only be good as an individual, but you can be great if your team are great.
Yeah.
And seeing that you are so much more collectively than you can be individually.
Do you think that there should be more servant leadership?
I think a better understanding of how much you need to support the people that you lead would be really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And just as you've described it, it's not so much what they can do for you as what you can do for them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. And finally, we're sort of moving here from servant mentality to disobedience or dissent on some level. This is a superb story. Builders who are working on a set of flats and houses in Chertsey, Surrey, turned up to work in skirts this week after managers at their employer, Bellway Homes, drew attention to a no shorts clause in the firm's health and safety policy. The all-male building crew opted for the prank after noting that female managers who worked in the on-site office routinely wore skirts to work. So in their view, their sartorial switch was protected under gender equality rules. They ended their hijinks after 2 days when management backed down over the shorts clause. Now, there's quite a lot going on in this story in terms of unintended consequences of workplace policies and a curious interpretation of equality rules. What's your take?
This is a great example that you can legislate and legislate and legislate and people will always find a way around it.
Yep.
What you should be looking for is the principle of people coming to work suitably dressed, that's suitable for the organisational culture, but for them to be comfortable. And the idea that it's something to do with gender and that you're supposed to dress in a certain way is so dated and outmoded. And I think these builders were taking exactly the right approach. Here are your rules.
Yeah.
We're applying the letter of the law. But actually, isn't it the spirit of the law that you really would want?
Yeah, it's marvellous. You can just imagine the conversations that went on when they were actually gearing up to exploit this loophole.
Well, it's a great example of sort of collective action, isn't it? That
yes.
we don't like what is being imposed upon us and we will do something about it. And I think this is such a flamboyant display. But these sorts of protests are happening all the time in organisations, under the radar perhaps, but just as effectively, just as powerfully. If you impose things on people that they don't want, at some point they will resist. And you'll be quite surprised at how that resistance manifests itself.
Yeah, this was very surprising indeed. Okay, that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section of the Institute's website, which can be found at www.institutelm.com. That's www.institutelm.com. Thank you very much indeed for your insights, Kate. I look forward to exploring a new set of stories with you next week.
Thanks, Matt.